The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome to Hearth Tales on Fresh FM. Join me, Rich McCoy, as we gather closer to hear the tales of seasoned artists, makers, creative souls, and those who love to support them. Listen to stories of their journeys, how they wrestle with their demons, and how they balance their calling with the scaffolding of admin, life, and self-promotion.
In the studio with us today, well, on the phone actually, we have Ewan McDougall. I first came across Ewan when I moved to Wellington for the first time and was talking to a gallery owner who had just about to put on one of his exhibitions or had just done so. And he recommended I get in touch because we had a lot in common from the conversations we had. But the only thing that lasted from those conversations was a Facebook connection with Ewan. Unfortunately, nothing else came of the gallery, but such is life. But yeah, for the listeners, would you mind just giving us an introduction as to who you are and what it is you do?
I'm Ewan McDougall. I live in Broadburn, Otipoti, and I'm a painter, an oil painter. I'm married to Sarah, and we've been married for 42 years now, very happy, and she's a writer, so our house is a little creative buzz house.
Yeah, certainly looks it from the photos and stuff. And I see your work everywhere, especially up in the up Nelson Way. There's you've got work in the Suter and in a couple of the more private galleries as well. So that's how I kind of keep seeing your work around.
Thank you.
Very distinctive, which I love. I've heard whispers that you have quite an interesting past. Can you give us a glimpse into that journey and what ultimately made you become an artist?
Yeah, it wasn't my path wasn't the sort of what I thought it might be when I was at school. I was in the top stream, and I was sent to law school to be a lawyer and work in a big firm, and I presume hopefully do good work and make a lot of money and have the house and the kids and do all of that, and I'm afraid that didn't quite come to pass. Yeah, it kind of wasn't me anyway. We were kids in Omaru. We grew up on the South Hall, just up from Friendly Bay, and we were let to run wild by our parents. So I've always had a bit of a wild streak in me, and a little bit feral. So it didn't quite pan out. I went to law school, and I hated it. I quit after 2 months, and I was lucky. I did political studies when Jim Flynn, the young left-wing American professor, had turned up from America, and he had been involved in getting blacks registered to vote in the Deep South, and some of those guys were killed. It was very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
The KKK were active, and they were killing people. So I thought he's a very brave man, and he certainly puts his money where his mouth is, or his principles first. So I liked him a lot. He was a brilliant lecturer, a brilliant man. He's famous for the Flynn effect, which is on IQ, and it's very important stuff. So I actually enjoyed doing political studies. It was the time of Vietnam War protest and all that stuff, so it was exciting. And although as a kid I always wanted to paint, when we couldn't go running wild in Omaru, we didn't have Xboxes or any sort of screens to look at, so we'd all paint. We painted with those little tin paint boxes you used to get, and I always wanted to do that, but it just kind of got pushed in the background. And so I was playing in rock and roll bands at university, and got married. Unfortunately, the party life was sort of overtook me, and we had a good rock and roll band.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lot of supporters, and there were lots of drugs and parties and wild stuff, and I'm afraid that lifestyle became the thing that I was completely immersed in. And so I got my degree. I got honours in political studies, and I was supposed to go and do a PhD and everything, but I also got honours in party animals, so it kind of won out. And I did get a scholarship to go to Melbourne to do a PhD. Didn't like it, didn't work out. The professor was a bit of a fascist. I walked into his office down the hall, and all the way along the hall were like, fascist, get out, and swastikas. Spray painted everywhere, so I should have realised that perhaps this guy's not going to be see eye to eye with me, and we didn't, and it didn't work. But I came back home and then went overseas again and travelled the world, and essentially partied everywhere I went, partied hard with whatever the local substance was, wherever you were. I went through the East on that drug trail, but the one thing that I did do through all of this kind of, you know, madness, really. It was, I went to big galleries, I went to see art, I saw Van Gogh, Gauguin, Monk, I saw great painters, Rembrandt in the Rijksmuseum, great painters virtually wherever I went. Even if I had a shocking hangover, I'd get on a tube or a bus and go and see a gallery. So I still always had that deep love of art. I just couldn't do it myself, you know. And am I boring you?
No, not at all. This is fantastic. I love it.
Well, it's not too long a story.
It's all good.
Basically, I came back home via America. It was a wild time. It was sort of the midst of that cocaine avalanche in the 80s, and we were right in the middle of that. And the guy I lived with was a major cocaine dealer for a cartel in Venezuela. So, yeah, it was... I'm lucky to get out of there alive. But I did, came back to Perth, and I met my darling Sarah, my wife, and we partied in Perth. Our house was a house for any Kiwis that arrived would come to our house, so Tuesday night could be party night till 3 in the morning. And this stuff continued on and got madder and madder until we ran out of money, and I was at the point of wanting to buy a gun to hold up a bank to get some money. And I got offered a job on an oil rig in Taranaki, and because I'd done it in the North Sea when I was in Scotland, I was able to do it, and I did that job, and I took off, and Sarah followed me later. And so we arrived back in Aotearoa, went out one night to the Magogs at the White Hart Hotel, and for some reason I thought I was Sugar Ray Leonard, an unbeatable fighter. Went to the Magogs motorcycle club rooms, and I picked a fight with all these guys, and completely flattened, and got my neck cracked in C6, which is very serious, and wound up in Taranaki Base Hospital. And if I ever meet that motorcycle guy, that Magog, I will thank him from the bottom of my heart, because he hit me and knocked me over and cracked my neck, I get to get into the health system, which in those days in New Zealand, unlike today, really worked for me. You know, I got to go into a therapy and then into a rehab, which was called Queen Mary Hospital in Hammersbrook. I don't know if you could do that. That place is no longer in operation anyway, but I'm not sure if it would happen quite so smoothly today. But I walked in there, and the psychiatrist said to me, after hearing my life story, you wanted to be a painter when you were a kid. I want you to go out there in this big wall in the welcome room for new patients coming in and paint a mural. I painted that mural, and I swear I walked out of that room in 2 feet of air.
Wow.
And that's, I knew exactly what I was going to do from then on when I got out. So that's 1989, and I've barely missed a day ever since, you know. So I'm very grateful, even though that's quite a dangerous lifestyle. It could have ended at a number of points, ended pretty swiftly. It didn't, and it got me into a position where I got someone who said, go paint, and it worked. So I'm very grateful to be where I am today, Rich.
Isn't that phenomenal, how that one sort of challenge just changed the course of your life? Just go out and do that mural.
I needed someone that I really respected to do it, and also I needed an authority figure. For far too long I've been an anarchist, which is fine, but at some stage you need somebody who knows better to tell you to do this. And this guy was the right man at the right time. His name was Robert Crawford. And I did that painting and came home, threw the lawnmower out and converted the gardening shed into my own little studio, and got stuck into it.
And from listening to a previous interview, you said you were quite figurative at that time. You wanted to work in quite a realistic sense, but your style now is very distinctive. How did you evolve that style that you have now?
Well, I started that because I was taught by Colin Wheeler in Oamaru, who was a regionalist painter and a sort of a soft realist. By soft, I mean he wasn't a hard edge photographic realist. He was like a bit more Herbert Hopper, that sort of style. So I tried to do that, but I'd seen Salvador Dali on one of those trips I told you about, and so I tried to be surrealist as well. I was just trying to find my way. It was always with figures. I didn't like abstract art. I've only seen one great piece of abstract art, and that was in New York, a painting by Cy Twombly, which really blew my socks off. But I am really I want to do figures. I'm a figurative painter. So I started doing that, and then after a couple of years, it worked pretty well. I was getting exhibitions and selling work. But I noticed a painting that one of my boys had done, which had a little man with a great big head and a great big silly loopy grin on his face, with a sun in the sky and a bird floating around. And it was such a happy little unrestrained untrained painting. So I thought, man, I'm going to have a go at that. I'm going to develop that. I'm going to take that child's art and make it into my art form. We'll see how it goes. And it just got sort of morphed from there.
So with your style, other than your son's painting and seeing the works of Dali, are there any other people you'd say had influenced you?
Always in New Zealand, Tony Formison for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Loved him. Philip Claremont, absolutely loved the use of colour and that mayhem, that wild stuff. I told her I was an almer in the south.
Mm-hmm.
I went to school every day, and I walked over the hill to school one every day and noticed this huge blackboard that some religious guy had painted in white on it, stuff like, I am the light, come unto me, and all of these Christian terms, which I don't fully understand, I'm not a Christian. But I saw that and thought, that's pretty weird, what's wrong with this guy? And then years later, I saw it on a card, exactly the same on a gut wall, and I thought, holy shit, this guy didn't invent this. What he did was he took it from the world and put it in a gallery on a canvas, the word paintings, you know? I like that, and I loved his figurative work, like The Promised Land, that moved me a lot. So New Zealand painters, but I've seen a lot of European painters.
Right.
You know. And I've seen...
You go right through.
I've seen Picasso, and that really worked, and the Art Book painters.
Right.
Jean Dubuffet, that great French painter, and also the Cobra painters, Carole Appel and those guys, so all big in the colour and pasto and quite wild figuration. It's certainly not any sort of realism, know you. That stuff put me on the way as well.
And with regards to how you make a painting, is there a lot of stuff that happens prior to you standing in front of the canvas, or you just stand in front of the canvas and make it happen? What is your process?
I'd say 9 times out of 10, I get the canvas, put a wash of acrylic colour on it, come back to it, it's right, and just start using a knife and a tin of oil paint and start making figures. And just the painting makes itself, really. I make the painting, but it tells me what it is.
Wonderful.
So there's a lot of removing stuff, scraping off paint, and there's a lot of adding paint where I need to add something. So it's not really, I don't draw a painting out anymore like I did when I was young.
And is that how you keep that sense of freedom and stuff in your paintings?
Sorry?
Is that how you keep that sense of freedom and movement and playfulness in the paintings?
Thank you. I think so.
Yeah.
By not having anything to follow, not having a plan to follow, not being too much in my head about what art should be or, you know, great things I've seen, just doing it. Simply just do it, you know.
Nice.
And that's the way I love to work. There are some differences. I mean, there have been times when I've sat bolt upright in bed and thought, man, I've got to do that. You know,
right.
I have a plan in my head then. But it's very rare for me to draw it. I did that with a show called Stripeyism in Dunedin, where I'd years ago done a painting which had a stripy background, multiple colours, horizontal stripes, and a deep purple figure in the middle, one of these loopy-faced, grinning, leaping guys. And it just hit me that, what if I swatch that round and put the stripes inside the figure and make the background flat? Just a simple thing like that. And that led to about 20 paintings and a show that was very successful called Stripeyism. So
wonderful.
Sometimes that sort of thing happens, you know, the road to domestic stuff, the lesson stuff.
And I've seen a couple of you, well, you've uploaded a couple of your pre-show ceremonies, which always make me smile. How much of a thing is that? Do you do that with every show you put on? And can you explain to the listeners what that is?
It's funny you should ask that one, because I've done it routinely just about every time. It's because when I was young, I was also an athlete, you know, a runner. And I was a Otago champion. I loved doing it. I trained very hard. So now I do a little bit of a run around the show, and always enjoyed it. And people usually laugh and get out of the way when I come charging around the room. It's also just a sort of a celebratory, I've done this work and it's up, and it feels like, you know, a victory to me to have done it, you know, up in the gallery. But on my last show in Dunedin, I forgot to do it. I was being interviewed by Liz, who was one of the gallery owners at Gallery De Novo. She was doing short reels for Instagram on about 5 or 6 different paintings, which I talk about them and put them up on Instagram, and I completely forgot to do the run. But never mind, can't do everything perfectly.
Does ritual appear anywhere else in your creative practice, or is it that's the thing?
Sorry, what was it?
Does ritual appear anywhere else in your creative practice?
Not really. I hate paintings being put down on the floor upside down. I always make sure everything's right side up. I don't. I'm not really a spiritual person, so I don't have any prayers or incantations. Although I must say, when I had a show up to Manawa, an elder from the local iwi blessed my paintings.
Oh, wow.
Put a little bit of water on them. And that was so moving. I really appreciated that, and I told him so. That had never happened before.
Wow.
But I don't have any particular ritual. The ritual is just getting the knife into the paint and putting it on.
Beautiful. And you discussed briefly your political stance with things, and I've always really appreciated your very strong left-leaning political voice, certainly on the posts you make on social media. And I get the impression that there's a lot of that goes into the paintings. There's certainly like a politics in your work.
It's not generally, Richard. Generally, right. As I say, it's just up there and I do it. And it's coming from the human thing inside me, and it's not got any particular religious, political or anything force in it, as far as I know, in general. I am political. I was in a union at 14 years of age in a freezing works, and I heard those communists rack up the men to go on strike because something unfair had happened, and then I had Jim Flynn as a lecturer. I am political. I am left-wing, and I'm proud of that.
Mm.
But I've only deliberately done a few political paintings, and they were for a show in Wellington at Ron's Gallery, and it was called Out of Left Field, and I had a picture of Donald Trump, and he was on the pig's body, and a number of other derogatory paintings of Trump, and some of various National Party people, and one of an evangelical Christ who was on the cross with a swastika at the top of the cross. So now and again, I will get overtly political, but I don't do it very much. It's probably less than 10% of the time.
Right. I think that's probably just stuck with me, I think, because I've really much related to it. How powerful of a weapon do you... Weapon, that's probably not the right word. A tool do you think art has in raising political voice and discourse?
The tools that I used to paint with?
Oh, just generally as a thing to promote political dialogue. What part do you think art can play with that?
Art can play a huge part. You only have to look at Guernica, Picasso's painting Guernica, about the which condemned the bombing of Guernica by Franco using German bombers. They were trialling them out for World War II, I think. There are great political paintings, and they're often very striking and very strong. Now, Ralph Hotry in Oti Poti, you know, his Black Union Jack, his statement against apartheid and also against land theft occurring to Maori here in Aotearoa. I think Ralph was a great exponent actually of using a lot of politics in his art in a very strong and beautiful way.
Mm.
I love Ralph's work, that sort of thing. I don't do it. I guess the whole statement, one of the things about art for me is that I'm not part of the hierarchical structure of capitalism, in the sense that I don't have a boss. I'm not in an office. I can't be told what to do by anybody. I read somewhere that some people hate artists because they're mixed with all classes of society. They come and go as they please. And I don't know if it's quite like that, but there is a freedom in being working for yourself as an artist. Another example of that is when I was in my show in New York, I can't even remember when it was now, it's over a decade ago, we're in a Chelsea gallery and a billionaire came in and offered half price for my painting. The painting was 20K and he offered the dealer 10K. And she got in touch with me and I said, no, I'm not doing that. This guy's got enough money to buy your gallery and about 20 others in Chelsea and he's trying to cheat me. I thought, you know, I'm not doing that, and I didn't do it. And so occasionally I have made a political point for my art, but I didn't go out hunting these things. Generally, if they come to me, I'll stand up then.
That's really interesting. And so you've obviously managed to make a name for yourself that you don't have to do other things as a job. And I think that's quite hard these days for creative people to manage to sustain themselves doing that.
Well, what made it easy for me at the start was I was working on an oil rig. I was the New McDelegate off Taranaki, and I injured my back really badly. So thanks to New Zealand being an enlightened place, as it was then, you could get accident compensation for that. So while my back was recovering, I could paint.
Right.
But at the same time, I was being covered with ACC. So, you know, I was able to keep going like that for quite a few weeks, which helped me then. But once that stopped, it was just paint to survive, really, at the start. And every now and again, I'd have a really good show and we'd be, the land of milk and honey.
Nice.
And then things would get really tight and I wouldn't sell. And Sarah would go to university. She did MAs and stuff and wrote plays and got some support for that. And her plays sold well as well. So we just found our way through by doing whatever we could.
Mm. I find your work, like, there's a real authenticity in what you do, in how you promote yourself. And your personality seems to align really well with the work you do. Do you have any thoughts with regards to a lot of artists who perhaps sometimes feel that they need to push themselves outside of their authentic self in order to make a name or to make a living to some degree about?
I guess I can't speak for other people, but there was a guy in Australia in Sydney called Ken Dunn. I don't mean to besmirch him or anything, but he went from actually some quite good paintings. He was quite famous in Sydney, but then he started selling his art on T-shirts.
Right.
And they called him Ken Overdone.
Right.
And I thought, I'm not going to do that.
No.
I mean, I think you can go too far into the commercialization, if that's what you mean.
Mm.
You can try to be something else. You can try to wheel and deal. And I'm not going to do that. I just have to keep doing the mahi. And just know that the rewards will come, even though it wasn't, I don't mean to make this seem easy. We had times when I was quite panicky about, are we going to keep our house? Are we going to get kicked out?
Mm.
You know, my parents were brought up in the Depression, so they knew what it was to not be able to pay the rent. You're out. So I did have these worrying times, but Sarah, God bless her, was way more confident than me, and she would say, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right.
Yeah, good on
she was absolutely right, so... You know, essentially, I couldn't have done much without her. We're a two-person team, actually.
Yeah, that's quite evident. You can see the love between you. Certainly online,
yeah,
anyway. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And so, what's next?
I really love her work, too. Oh. She's done great plays. She's had a play called Up the Duff that got taken to Edinburgh. I think that was in maybe the 90s, and got Best New Work in the Edinburgh Fringe.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so, yeah, we respect each other's work. That's the other thing.
Maybe I should talk to her at some point as well.
You'd be welcome, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll find out. And so what's next for you, Ewan? What are you working on now?
Well, I've got, speaking in terms of exhibitions, I've got one in Timaru at the York Street Gallery. I love Debbie, she's a good person, a good sculptor up there, and she wants to show my work in about November. And then I go to the Railway Street Gallery in Auckland in March. And the women that run that gallery are very good. I had one show up there last year and it was successful and yeah, nice opening. I like friendly openings and so we'll do that again in March, all going well. Apart from that, it's really just one foot after the other, actually, Rich, you know, just keep going.
Do you have anything planned for at the top of the South at all?
I haven't at the moment.
Right.
The truth is I'd need to find a gallery at the moment.
Yeah, that's hard up here.
So I'll have a good look around.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
I've had shows in Nelson and they've been a real joy and they've been pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
So I'd love to do it again. People come out of Nelson, eh? I was impressed with that.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good town. It's a real good town. But yeah. And if you could go back to your younger self and ask and offer any advice, what would you say?
Man, that's difficult.
Isn't it?
I've often thought, what if I hadn't gone to law school, if I'd gone to art school?
Mm.
You know, the conclusion I come to is I'd be a different sort of painter, and I might be a painter like a lot of other painters.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd have the distinctive voice that I found myself just by having to muck in, really, you know?
Mm.
Just by having to find my way through the jungle, as it were. So I counter that quite quickly in my own head, and it does crop up from time to time, because the fact is, if you've got that art school degree, often it does open some doors to certain sorts of galleries, you know?
Yeah. It didn't do me any favours.
Sort of galleries.
Good. And what words of wisdom would you offer to aspiring artists who are just starting or wanting to return to their career?
What I used to do when I was running in a particularly long and hard cross-country race or something, just keep going.
Yeah.
Keep going. If you love doing it, you've got no choice for it. You'll be miserable doing something else. Don't put it on the back burner and say, oh, well, I'll go and work in this office or go and work labouring or something. I mean, I think you'll be miserable. Try to do what you love doing if you can possibly do it.
Wonderful. And where can people find your work?
Well, I've got a website. So I think if you Google Ewan McDougall, I come up in a number of different places and gallery websites as well.
Mm-hmm.
I've got my own website. I also do art on Instagram. Facebook is politics. It's the realm of two for me, so that's different. But Instagram. And, I think Googling my name generally comes up with quite a few.
Excellent.
I have a lot of work at home too, so people can always contact me directly and have a look. My galleries are Gallery De Novo in Dunedin, and they're really good, and they've got a lot of good work. Plus, the show that I've just finished is still being held by that gallery, and they'll probably have it for as long as they want, actually. So,
wow.
It was called Fire and Water, and I liked it a lot. And then in Christchurch, the Strange Gallery, that's a big new space now. And Googling that will find, it'll show you a lot of my work as well and work of other really good artists. Where have we got? Railway Street Gallery up there in Auckland and York Street Gallery in Timaru.
I don't know how you keep it all in your head.
Show in about 3 years' time, I'll be doing some public galleries as well, but that's not set in stone yet.
And thank you. Like, you're an absolute inspiration to hear. It's great to finally get to talk to you through some messaging and following you on Facebook and stuff. It's been wonderful. And be well and good luck. Thank you so much for your time, mate.
Great to talk to you, and I'll look forward to seeing how it comes out.
Wonderful. I'll let you know. Be well, brother.
Okay, mate.
Bye.
Okay, kia ora. Cheers, mate. Bye.
Thank you for lending us your ears. You can find more interviews and how to request a Hearth Tale featuring your favourite New Zealand artist, maker or creative soul on our website, hearthtales.com. And you can listen to this episode of Hearth Tales on freshfm.co.nz with a new show every fortnight. Until next time, fare thee well, friends. Fare thee well.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.